It is the purpose of WGNU's St. Louis Urban Forum to include a wide variety of hosts and guests that will discuss important topics of concern from all different angles and with different views. However, the views and opinions expressed on the programs aired on WGNU are those of the hosts, participants, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff, management, or ownership of WGNU 920 AM. We invite you to participate in the discussion here at the St. Louis Urban Forum as we talk together to make St. Louis a better city for all of us.
Good morning, St. Louis, and welcome to another episode of To Your Health. My name is David Moskowitz, and this hour is brought to you by Genomed, www.genomed.com. On the web, 314-983-9933, on your telephone. Today we're going to talk about three items of importance to your health. We're going to talk about two of them that were raised by the president at his State of the Union speech, and the third that directly affects your health here in St. Louis. First, to clear out the two items, number one, nuclear power. Nuclear power, which the president embraced in his State of the Union speech, unfortunately, is a bad idea for your health. The reason being that the wastes that build up in the running of a nuclear power plant have to be kept in a stable environment for 15,000 years, which is one half-life of plutonium. Plutonium is one of the major wastes that builds up in the nuclear fuel rods during the running of a nuclear power plant. It's extremely toxic. A single gram of plutonium, if divided up and put in the throat of every human being on Earth, would actually kill them. So it's an extremely toxic substance, and it has a very long half-life before it becomes harmless, before it decays to a non-radioactive daughter element. And the problem is that there's no structure on Earth that's stable for 15,000 years. There was talk about turning nuclear waste into glass. There was talk about burying it at the bottom of Yucca Mountain in the Southwest. There was even talk about putting it on rocket ships and blasting it out into space. But none of these policies are at all practical. And I think the president would do better exploring solar and wind power and leaving nuclear power to the past. The second item is the matter of healthcare reform. Again, I think the only plan that both parties would like would be to leave private insurance alone and to actually focus on the public sector. And that would involve using the Public Health Service to take care of the 50 million uninsured and to make the plan cost neutral, just give it back the VA. In 1921, the Public Health Service loaned 57 hospitals to the VA. It's time to get it back and to use it for the 50 million uninsured Americans, and it can be done in a cost-neutral way. And now we have somebody on the line. Remember, our phone lines are 314-448-4325, and from out of town, 877-920-9468. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hello, Charles.
Yes, how you doing?
Very good. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was wondering how much do you charge for your services?
Well, Charles, thank you very much. This gets to the third point that I wanted to discuss today, which is to make St. Louis dialysis free in 5 years, by 2015. GenoMed, sponsoring this hour, has published a way to prevent people with diabetes or high blood pressure from getting kidney failure. And our price, if I can say it on the air, is $200 for the first visit. Our clinic is in Olivet, and $100 per visit thereafter. But odds are good that we can get by with just a single visit. And then,
now, is that?
I'm sorry?
Is that per month, per week, per year? What, I mean?
So the it's just $200 covers you for, should be enough, actually, for an entire year.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Dr. Mosky.
Thank you very much, Charles, for calling in.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
So this brings up the third and most important topic, since it's a local topic and it's something we can do something about. Nuclear power and healthcare reform are issues taking place in Washington, which is a long way away, and it's unclear that anybody in Washington listens to WGNU. But at least here in St. Louis, we can take care of our own business, and that is to try to prevent dialysis and eradicate dialysis in the next 5 years. And the hope to make St. Louis dialysis free consists of this. If you have diabetes, you have a 50% chance of going on the kidney machine. If you have high blood pressure, you have a much lower chance, but it's not zero. About one out of every six people with high blood pressure go on the kidney machine. If you're African American, your chances of going on the kidney machine are much higher. So you can have diabetes, be African American, and your chances go up essentially to close to 100% if you have diabetes, and close to 50% if you have high blood pressure. And so everybody in St. Louis knows somebody on dialysis, often a family member, and certainly a friend. And high blood pressure actually begins in high school. And one of the things that would be extremely useful is if the city of St. Louis and the county, which have nurses in every school, use the nurses to do a blood pressure screening on their students. And I think there would be a number of children whose high blood pressure was detected early on. For example, at Vashon, we did a screening a few years ago, and one out of 20 children had serious hypertension, pressures of 150 over 100. Normally, pressures for an 18-year-old person would be on the order of 90 over 60. So 150 over 100 is seriously high, even for a much older adult. And by detecting high blood pressure early and treating it, the hope is that we'd be able to prevent the complications of high blood pressure, which that person would get, which would almost invariably be going on dialysis in their 30s and having a heart attack in their 40s and being dead by their 50s. So if we can detect high blood pressure and treat it, that person then is able to live, should be able to live a completely normal life with a normal lifespan out into the 80s. So this brings up the issue of how we're going to do it. How are we going to arrest kidney failure in St. Louis? How are we going to make 90% of kidney failure disappear so that the few people who still have kidney failure that we can't prevent have enough kidneys so that they can go straight to kidney transplant and don't have to use the kidney machine at all? And that's why the phrase is to make St. Louis dialysis free by 2015. And it's obviously never been done before. No city has ever become dialysis free. And so I invite your thoughts about how we can do it. For people who come to the GenoMed clinic, Charles just asked about the price. It's $200 for the first visit, and that should be enough. If additional visits are required, they're at $100 each. But as I say, a single visit should be enough with follow-up by telephone or email. The drugs that we use are generic. The reason why we can get prevention of kidney failure and nobody else can is because we use these drugs at about five times higher dose than anybody else does in town or anywhere else in the world, and we've shown that it's safe. So how many of you listening to this show think you have a normal blood pressure? First of all, what's a normal blood pressure? The number 120 over 80 should stick in your mind, because if your blood pressure is above 120 over 80, even if it's 125 over 80, and certainly if it's 140 over 90 and above, you should be on our treatment, which consists of a drug called an ACE inhibitor. Now, there are a lot of ACE inhibitors. They end in pril, the chemical name. Some of them are called lisinopril. You might be on that, enalapril. It turns out that the best ACE inhibitor for preventing kidney failure is quinapril. It used to be called Acupril when Pfizer was selling it. It's been generic for 4 or 5 years now. It's quite cheap, under a dime a pill, and that's the pill that we use. So the first item is to make sure you check your blood pressure. People should check their blood pressure as often as they check the pressure in their tires. And it's just as important if you want your body to run well. Where do you check your blood pressure? Well, every pharmacy has a free blood pressure machine. Now they have these nice chairs that you can sit in, stick your arm in a cuff, press a start button, the arm cuff blows up, and then reads out what your blood pressure and your pulse are. And you can do it a couple times, and generally the first number is a higher number. And as you do it, 3 minutes, 5 minutes later, the pressure comes down. Blood pressure is extremely variable number, but it's very responsive to how stressed or excited you are. So as you sit in the chair at Schnucks or Walmart's or Sam's Club, you get more relaxed and your blood pressure comes down. But if the lowest number that you have when you're checking your blood pressure is still well above 120 over 80, you should call GenoMed. And the number is 983-9933. So what we would like to do is make blood pressure as common as cholesterol. Everybody knows their cholesterol number now, and what we'd like you to do is to also know what your blood pressure is this week. So whenever you see a free blood pressure cuff, If you have a sec, get a check. Sit down and relax for a few minutes and check your blood pressure. And make sure your blood pressure this week is below 120 over 80, because even if your blood pressure was good last week, it's a very dynamic system and it tends to rise with age. For example, my blood pressure had been perfectly well controlled for 10 years, and then all of a sudden, just in the last few months, I'm 58, it started to come up, and I'm now taking, I had to double up on the dose of one of the blood pressure pills that I use, in addition to Quinapril, which only works so well. You have to add a second agent and sometimes a third agent in order to keep your blood pressure below 120 over 80. And with age, the normal tendency for blood pressure is to keep going up. And so we have to stay on it. It's a game that that we can't get out of. Once you're over the age of 20 or so, you have to control your blood pressure. If not, it's your lookout. In other words, you have no choice but to control your blood pressure. And if you don't, you're setting yourself up for stroke, heart attack, kidney failure, early death. So it's essentially a game that you find yourself in, whether you like it or not. And it's a game that everybody has to worry about. They have to worry about it for themselves, and they have to worry about it for all their relatives, especially their older relatives, their parents, their uncles and aunts. And it's the best thing you can do for somebody is to buy them a $35 blood pressure cuff. If they need it, you might want to buy them a $10 cuff, large cuff for their arm, if the small regular cuff is too small. It will save their lives. It will also save your life. So now, how do we spread the word that kidney failure can be prevented, and that the way to do it is by tight control of blood pressure under 120 over 80 using high-dose Quinapril? Well, I'd like to invite your thoughts on the matter. Here's what I've thought of so far. I don't think that there are enough blood pressure cuffs in the city of St. Louis and in the county. I think there need to be more blood pressure cuffs than just Schnucks, Walmart, and Sam's Club. And it used to be Walgreens had blood pressure cuffs in pretty much every store, but I've noticed that they don't anymore, or they're broken and don't get fixed. So what I'd like to suggest is that people who have stores where customers come and spend time, like barber shops or beauty shops, independent retail pharmacists who aren't with a chain, people who run laundromats, people who run bowling alleys, any place where people come and spend time, even bars, buy them, invest in a $35 rely on blood pressure cuff from Walmart, and maybe spring for the $10 large cuff too, so that you can accommodate all customers. And then if you want to be entrepreneurial, you can actually charge a quarter for each blood pressure reading. And in no time at all, you'll have made back the cost of the machine, and then it'll be pure profit from the second week on. If you want to make more money, you can charge a dollar for a blood pressure cuff. But just to make it easy for people to check their blood pressure, make it automatic, that's the only way we're going to defeat kidney failure. And now we have a question from Alfred, who's on the line right now. Alfred?
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, this is Alvin Parks from the city of East St. Louis, Dr. Moskowitz.
Oh, Mayor Parks. It's great to hear your voice.
Yes, it's great to hear yours, too, and it's great to hear anybody talking about doing something to improve the health of these communities. I want to ask you, Doctor, what are some of your thoughts in reducing the need for dialysis, and what do you think that we should be doing in these communities to help reduce the need for dialysis in these communities?
Well, Alvin Parks, one of the most exciting politicians and leaders that's come around in the last 30 years that I've been in the St. Louis area, mayor of East St. Louis, a very dynamic, extremely friendly, extremely forward-thinking leader. It's an honor to have you on my show, and it's an honor to brainstorm with you about how we're going to essentially do public health in an era when there's no money for public health.
Well, it's very important, and I thank you for the compliment, Doctor, and I want to thank you for thinking proactively and getting out in front of situations as opposed to everything needing to be a treatment. Of course, treatment is very important, but I want to explore with you, Doctor, what we can do to reduce the need for dialysis and anything else that you feel is something that really gets into some expensive treatments. A lot of people who may need dialysis would have a hard time affording it, considering what we have from a public health standpoint. So what are some of your thoughts on what we can do to reduce the need for dialysis? Because I want to raise our hand right now collectively as a city and tell you, if there's anything that the city of East St. Louis can do, or that I can do individually in helping you with that cause, we are 100% interested in supporting your efforts.
Well, Mayor Parks, you're the first politician on the east side, on the east of the Mississippi River, to embrace our dialysis-free in 5-year campaign. Of course, Reverend Morris and Jeanette Mott Oxford, state representatives from Missouri, have been stalwart supporters on the west side of the river. And the truth is that actually getting to the people who have high blood pressure and getting their medicines changed is the crux of the matter, and it's not so easy. And so what I'd like to do is talk to you in the coming weeks about how we can actually do that in a practical way in East St. Louis, and maybe review the resources that are available in terms of free blood pressure cuffs. And also how we can get the word out, both on the radio and TV, to the citizens of East St. Louis, because not knowing about a cure is pretty much essentially the same as not having a cure. So I think the first point is education, and I completely welcome your support in trying to get the word out.
Well, one of the agencies that would be an outstanding agency to partner with would be Eastside Health District, and that's where Elizabeth Whiteside happens to be the executive director. That agency does an excellent job of outreaching and doing what they need to do to educate this community. There are other agencies as well that I'm sure would be very much welcoming of what we can do to get the word out and to supply maybe different testing, perhaps providing cups in more places than you normally see them right now. We have a lot of people who go to our grocery stores. Of course, Schnucks is a big one. We also have Save-A-Lot. There's a new one opening up on the east end of our city, mm-hmm. and that is, it's going to be called the Crown Food Mart. But several of the gas stations have a lot of people who go there on a regular basis. People come to City Hall. Wherever people are, mm-hmm. put it in their faces to indicate this is how you can reduce the possibility of needing dialysis.
I completely agree with you, and I look forward to working with the Eastside Health District Director, Ms. Patton Whiteside, and the idea of gas stations and a cuff in City Hall. It'd be a nice way of getting cuffed for a change.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate your call, and I really appreciate your support.
And let us know how we can help.
Thank you so much.
God bless.
God bless you. And now we have, we're very privileged, I believe, to have Mr. Lawrence Guillot on line
two. Good morning, Doctor. I'm so glad that I just heard the discussion that was conducted. To me, that is the kind of organizing that is absolutely essential. I put out a newsletter every month, and I put it out to create that kind of dialogue that I just heard. And I want to congratulate you on your work. Your audience may not know that we published your research in our newsletter. We've not gotten one person challenging it or responding negatively to it. And I want to, if you don't mind, I'd like to point out how you and I got acquainted.
Oh, I'd love it. Let me just start out by saying for the benefit of the audience, you don't know who's talking to you right now. Right now, you've got one of the towering giants of the civil rights movement. Somebody as important as Martin Luther King on the radio. This is Lawrence Guillot, president of the Mississippi Freedom Party that desegregated the Democratic Party in 1964, co-founder of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Mr. Guillot, you should really tell people exactly all the things that you've done, because you are the architect, one of the very few architects of the civil rights movement.
Well, I'm very proud to have been, and I consider you one of the architects of how we really cut into. I'm a kidney transplant.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
And if we had gotten your work around earlier, maybe I wouldn't be a kidney transplant. I've gone through dialysis, so I understand the importance. What I've done is commit my life to the empowerment of other people. I was involved with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. I was chairman of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. I was a presidential elector for Lyndon Johnson in 1964 in Mississippi. And I was honored, the Freedom Democratic Party was honored at the 2004 Democratic National Convention. And that's what I do. I work with Operation Understanding. I work with Cultural Leadership, where I met your daughter.
Right.
Who put the two of us together. And again, it is that kind of building of relationships that are about organizing. That is precisely what we need at this time. And I just want to say that anything I can do to further your cause, I really consider it our cause. You can count on me.
Well, Mr. Guillot, you don't know how my heart sings to hear you.
Well, I'm just very proud of what you're doing and the way you're doing it. And anyone who wants to get my newsletter, just call 1-662-822-2630. That's the telephone number of Ms. Margaret Kibbe. And we do it. We send it out every month. And I like to be associated with people who are organizing other people to empower them. Congratulations. Keep up the good work. And anything I can do, you let me know.
Thank you so much, sir.
You have a good day.
You too. Well, and anybody in the audience who wants to be connected to Mr. Guillot and to get on the mailing list, on the email list for his newsletter, please contact Genomed. We've got all that contact information as well. And now it's my pleasure to open the phone line to Mr. Lionel Nixon, who
is... Good morning, Dr. Dave. How are you doing this morning?
I'm very good. You are no stranger to these airwaves.
Well, you know, I've been here from Chicago for the last 3-4 years, and I see the potential in what you're doing. And so as a media counsel for the African News World newspaper, I wrote something in my column, the Nixon Report, about you. And what I called this morning about is, what are the implications within a regional setting for state legislators to save money by the application of this process? How much money could the states, both in Illinois on both sides of the Mississippi, save if they were able to take people off dialysis? I also want to say I want to encourage you to just keep pressing and keep doing the right thing, and God is going to bless you. So I'm going to hang up and listen to your response.
Well, Lionel, thanks so much for calling in. Of course, you've hit the nail on the head. The whole discussion these days in healthcare is about saving money. President Obama has asked for it. Congress would like it. President Obama in particular has asked for prevention, which is exactly what we're trying to do. I'd like to illustrate just how hard it is to prevent disease in our current healthcare system. Now, when I was growing up in the 50s, eradicating diseases, whole diseases like polio, and treating TB for the first time became possible. And the medical profession was delighted to close down TB sanitaria and to close down polio wards, just as earlier they had closed down rheumatic fever wards with the introduction of penicillin. Unfortunately, the medical community is no longer interested in eradicating disease. Medicare itself, who's the single payer for dialysis, had no interest when I visited them in 2004 in saving 90% of their dialysis budget, which is $40 billion a year and rising at 10% per year. The reason why it's rising is because the costs of the machines and of the labor are going up, and also there's a 7% increase per year in the number of dialysis patients. So there's anything that's rising at over 5% per year is called an epidemic. So there, in fact, is a dialysis epidemic going on, which has been going on for a number of years, at least 20 years, and it affects the African American community most, the Hispanic community next, and the white community essentially the least. So five times as many patients on dialysis are black than white, and three times as many Hispanics as whites. So it's a disease of minorities, and it would be a wonderful disease to eliminate from the point of view of costs. It is the most expensive disease for any health plan. And it is the number one item that reinsurance companies cover. And so I've talked to health plans, and they have not had any interest in eliminating dialysis. And I've talked to the reinsurance plans, and they've had no interest in eliminating dialysis. And the reason, I think, is because everybody in health insurance is a pass-through. In other words, the costs that they can are involved, they can get they can raise premiums, or they, if they're a reinsurance company, they can raise the rates that the health plans pay them the next year to cover. In other words, revenues and costs in the healthcare industry are the same thing. So you don't want to lower your costs because you're actually lowering your revenues. And so when the president calls for, and Congress call for lowering healthcare costs, nobody in Congress realizes that the entire healthcare system only wants costs to rise. The private sector, the health insurance companies that I talked to, and the reinsurance companies, so the private sector wants costs to rise. And the public sector, Medicare, the bureaucrats, don't want to lose their jobs. Because if you eradicated 90% of kidney failure, you'd cut 90% of Medicare bureaucrats' jobs, because there are all these ESRD networks that that support dialysis. A dialysis patient costs about $100,000 a year right now to Medicare. In a few years, the cost will be up to $150,000 a year. So we're talking about people, for the most part, minorities, for the most part, low income, who all of a sudden become incredible cash cows for the healthcare system. Somebody who wasn't bringing in any money at all because they had no money, all of a sudden is bringing in over $100,000 a year to the healthcare system. And there's not, to be honest, there's not a lot of political power that minorities have ever had in this country. And by keeping this disease around, to me, it's the equivalent of a modern-day Tuskegee. By not telling people that there's a cure and keeping this disease around, to me, it's a criminal act. And it's no different than Tuskegee. It's a much greater scale, and it's the equivalent, I think, of medical slavery. Now we're graced to have on line one, Margaret Kibbe. Margaret, would you like to say something? Margaret, can you do you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I was kind of interested that it's how the disability system, which is a system with which I'm very familiar, is designed to accommodate the dialysis industry. It's very, very difficult to get people on disability, contrary to what many people believe. But it's written into law, if you are on dialysis, you automatically qualify for disability, and you can automatically get Medicare or Medicaid to cover most of your dialysis treatment and the things that go with it.
Let's just take a little break for the audience here. This Margaret Kibbe is the editor of Lawrence Guyot's newsletter, who just called in a little before. Margaret Kibbe is calling from Greenville, Mississippi. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So talk a little bit more about the disability system and why that's important.
The disability system is what people who cannot work or disabled children can qualify for SSI and Social Security disability. But it is a long and horrendous process. It usually takes 2.5 to 3 years. You're going to get denied when you apply. It is, I think, during the Reagan administration, they changed the outlook of the Social Security Administration. They're no longer trying to help you, and it's designed to impede you from getting benefits. I'll put it that way. It's very difficult to get disability. But they have a listings of impairments, and if you have any of those listings of impairments, which are very severe, you automatically get disability. And one of those impairments is kidney failure, end-stage renal failure that require dialysis.
So they're greasing the chute, so to speak, for dialysis patients. So
yes.
What do you conclude from that?
Well, I conclude that they don't mean or intend anyone to recover or get well. In other words, it's supporting an industry. And it also, as I think you've talked about this before, the people who really could benefit from a kidney transplant or the people who just really cannot avoid dialysis, it's so many of them that they've exhausted the list of donors or possible kidney donors. There's no way the rest of us with healthy kidneys can cover the people who need them. But if you prevented kidney disease or kidney failure, I should say, if you prevented that, there may be enough donors that most people could get a kidney donated and they wouldn't have to go on dialysis.
Well, Ms. Kibbe, you're absolutely right. When dialysis was sold to the Congress in 1973, and they decided to pay for it, because until 1973, you had to pay out of pocket for dialysis. Health plans wouldn't cover it. Only the rich survived, and there were it was a rationed resource. There were literally death committees that would decide if there were three people who needed dialysis, which of the three could get the one spot available on the dialysis schedule. And if you had diabetes, you were just automatically disqualified because they knew that you'd have heart disease as part of the diabetes, and they wanted people who would live as long as possible on the dialysis machine, and they didn't want to use up a dialysis spot for somebody who was only going to be around for 2 or 3 years and then die of a heart attack from diabetes. So that if you had just kidney failure like polycystic kidney disease but good heart, then you got preference for the kidney machine. And if you were a minister or a leader in the community, you got the kidney machine. If you were just a kid, 25 years old and not a leader in the community, it was too bad. All of that changed in 1973 when Congress decided to pay for all the dialysis patients who ever came to end-stage renal disease. And it was sold to Congress because the argument was that all you needed to do was go on dialysis, then you could keep working. And what you're saying is that the system now recognizes that nobody keeps working on dialysis, that it's such a debilitating disease to have to be on the kidney machine, that it's the extreme minority that manages to keep holding a job while they're on dialysis.
Well, they could never work in what you call competitive employment, 40 hours a week. They couldn't do this. They can work part-time with a flexible job, or they can manage their own job, but which the requirement of disability is to be able to work, even if it's an easy job, but you do have to report for work 40 hours a week. And of course, a dialysis schedule precludes that. Then you feel wiped out after you come off the machine. So that doesn't work either. And of course, as you say, there's the complications. You have your vein collapsing and got to go to the hospital to open that back up. There are a lot of other things that go along with dialysis that makes things difficult.
So Ms. Kibbe, why, given how horrific life on dialysis is, which I don't think most people know about, why do you think all the authorities, the health plans, Medicare, the National Kidney Foundation, the NIDDK, the National Institute of Health Kidney Institute, the AHRQ, a lot of nonprofits, ARP, AARP, a lot of the people that we look to for trust, that we trust our health advice from, why have they stayed silent, do you think?
Part of it may be that they don't know. Part of it is political connection or profit from this. There's some very wealthy people connected with the dialysis industry. Now you have a dialysis unit at all the prisons. I mean, people are making a lot of money with this. And a friend of mine who is a dialysis nurse kind of likes it as a way of employment or a way of work because it's easy.
Right, and it's with, you know, as the baby boomers age, there's only going to be more and more dialysis. The fastest growing population on dialysis are people over 80, so it's a nursing home boondoggle, and then every Indian reservation is building a new dialysis unit because the rate of diabetes is 50% in American Indian reservations, and diabetes leads in over half of cases to kidney failure and dialysis.
And instead of that, there should be like workshops or community meetings on how to prevent this and some regular screening so people can know what their blood pressure is and get their diabetes under control.
Well, I totally agree, and I really appreciate your calling in from Mississippi. There's certainly a lot of dialysis in Mississippi.
A lot.
And
we talk about small towns every 25 miles, about 25 miles to 40 miles apart is building their own units.
No,
well, the town isn't, but it is the person who has these kidney places or dialysis places has enough money where they can build one. Every 25 miles.
You know, I drove down 55 when I first came to St. Louis 30 years ago to New Orleans, and I couldn't believe how poor Mississippi is. I mean, just close to the highway, there were shacks where people were living, and I know it. You know, Missouri might be 48th in education, and Mississippi's 50th. So we're close together, and the idea of having state of the art Fresenius and DaVita machines, and state of the art dialysis units, in places where people have the same are living in the same houses that they've lived in for the last 100 years, and can't get repaired, is just phenomenal to me.
Don't forget, in addition to the units, we have people who do home dialysis.
Right, it's an amazing industry. It's an amazing industry. It employs a lot of people, and it's amazing to me that the people who have taken oaths to help patients would rather just set up the kidney machine than tell everybody in their community how to prevent it. So
that's right.
We're going to have to work on people's conscience, and we are not giving up. This is actually a civil rights issue for our time to have a cure and have it be suppressed, and not to have the people that you trust for healthcare advice tell you about it is criminal.
That's correct.
Thank you so much for being on the line, Ms. Kibbe, and I look forward to working with you in the future to try to get the word out.
Bill, and I'll encourage people to support your work.
Thank you so much. And now we've got Ray, who has a question about kidney disease.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, man, I appreciate your talk show and the solid information that you're disseminating to the community, and also having that young lady on earlier. I just wanted to know how can we better manage and keep our kidneys healthy. What are we doing wrong? What in this diet is killing us?
Well,
thank you,
Ray. Thanks so much for calling in. I think the first thing is it's not the diet. It has nothing to do with willpower. has nothing to do with lifestyle. It is purely a matter of drugs. I mean, it boils down to, are you taking Quinapril? And are you taking enough? And if your blood pressure isn't high enough to take massive amounts of Quinapril, then there's another drug called Trandolapril or Mavic, which is also generic, which you can take in smaller doses, but which seems to have the same effect as Quinapril. So it really comes down to one of those two drugs. And that's what our data shows. I'm going to Los Angeles to a Gordon Research Conference on angiotensin at the end of this month. And I noticed that everybody coming to that meeting is from academia. And there isn't anybody from a health insurance company. There isn't anybody from any sort of pharmaceutical industry. It's purely academic interest at this point, and yet it is the most fundamental issue for controlling costs and for preventing cardiovascular disease, of which kidney failure happens to be the hardest type to prevent. And so scientifically, angiotensin II is underappreciated, and public health-wise, Quinapril, these ACE inhibitors that block production of angiotensin II, Quinapril and Mavic, are also underappreciated. And so it's a small group of investigators who are already devout believers and are going to hopefully live to see their faith realized in better public health and better outcomes. And then it's companies like mine, Genomed, a next-generation disease management company that's actually going to help keep patients off dialysis. And in the process, we believe, keep people around for an extra 10 years with good quality of life. So it's our hope that that just getting people on the right drugs, regardless of their diet, regardless of exercise, obviously, the better diet you're on, the more weight you're losing, the more you're exercising, all of that helps and probably is synergistic. There's probably a multiplier effect. But the one important thing we know that you have to be on to save your kidneys is to be on high-dose Quinapril or low-dose Mavic. Those are the two drugs. Well, thank you very much for all your kind questions, and know that we'll be working with some wonderful people to bring blood pressure cuffs near you, and we encourage you to stick your arm out and save your kidneys.